Hi, my name is Daniel Garber, and I review movies each Friday morning for culturalmining.com and Take 5 CIUT 89.5 FM. Everyone says the movies are going through a major change these days. I'm not so sure. Some people think that the big change is in their speed. The pace of movies is much more frenetic, and viewers have a lower attention span than they used to. So you get fun movies like Crank High Voltage, a comic action movie from last summer about a British gangster who has to keep recharging the batteries in his artificial heart. Really fast movie. Older action movies don't have the speed and the special effects of newer ones. Hitchcock's adventure thrillers like North by Northwest, for example, with airplane chases in cornfields and fight scenes on Mount Rushmore, are just not as impressive as they used to be. And the pace is slower than now. It's simple enough to have a herd of CGI elephants run across the screen, even for a cheap laugh. But whether or not chase scenes are gradually speeding up their pace and are flashier, speedier, noisier, they're still more or less the same. It's just a matter of degree. Other people point to the new technology available to audiences. After Avatar, all movies are going to be 3D and using video game style animation. I can safely say that ain't going to happen. It may become more frequent. As long as 3D movies make money, I guess they're going to keep making them, but I doubt it will amount to a fundamental change in the nature of movies. But I'd like to talk about one small detail that seems to be completely disappearing from the movie experience after 90 or 100 years, something that outlived silent movies, black and white movies, movies on film. But I'm not talking about something in the movie itself, but something outside the movie, in front of the movie. There's been a subtle change in the past few years. One seemingly superficial part of the movies is fading away. I'm speaking of the velvet curtain. The what? Traditionally, after the trailers, but before the movie begins, a curtain is lowered or pulled shut, only to reopen after the film starts to roll. So the first image of any film is the luxuriousness of curtains distorting the projected image, soon replaced by the crisper look of film directly on the screen, truly unique to seeing a movie in a movie theater. You know when a movie is starting by the opening of the curtain and when it's over by its closing. I don't know for sure why it started. Perhaps a curtain was needed to replicate the vaudeville or stage theaters that were their main competition. In fact, many movie theaters used to share their screens with newsreels, cartoons, shorts, and B-movies in double features. So the opening of the curtain before the main movie gave it a sense of majesty. Many theaters are now inserting a metaphorical curtain before the movie, a 3D-looking cartoon of the magic and adventure of that changed cinema's plants growing around the seats, shooting stars and rainbows in the sky, kids excitingly drinking a cup of cola. But an expensive ad clip doesn't do it for me. And they haven't even tried to replace the equally important closure over the credits at the end of the movie. I'm not nostalgic, but I do regret the slow demise of this cinematic gesture. This unspoken amen now in its death throes, the end of the velvet curtain. Here are some films that visit different, exciting places in the world. First, My Winnipeg, directed by the great Guy Madden, playing this weekend at Cinematheque Ontario, check local listings, is a fantastical black and white pseudo-documentary about that city, told in a mixture of forms ranging from low-budget NFB shorts to government mind control tapes, to classic B-movie melodrama. The movie, narrated, I believe, by the filmmaker himself, makes the seemingly gray, windswept city of Winnipeg with its empty hockey rink and suburban tracks into eerie, psychologically perverse memories of Madden's childhood and the collective unconscious memory of the city itself. Images drift from scenes on a train to frozen horses, suburban rec rooms and long-gone Eaton's department stores to an iced river, a junction of streams morphing into a woman's pubic hair. This is one of his best movies, as good as Tales from the Gimli Hospital, and is rarely shown. See it. A completely different ode to his city is When in Rome, a romantic comedy directed by Mark Steven Johnson. It's a simple movie about a woman, played by Kristen Bell, who is pursued by a series of lovesick men under a spell. On a visit to her sister's wedding in Rome, she runs out of the church just as Italian Morris dancers take over the dance floor and steal some coins from the Trevi Fountain. Hence, the love spell. No, it doesn't actually make sense. Kristen Bell, who you may remember from the TV series Veronica Mars and Heroes, is fun to watch. She has a good sense of comic timing. and guest cameos from comic actors like John Heder from Napoleon Dynamite and Will Arnett are sort of funny for a few seconds, but this can't rescue a really bad movie. While there are a few good gags, where Kristen Bell is trapped in embarrassing situations, most of the forced laughs come from cheap pratfalls and slapstick head bumps. The funniest part of the movie is that Bell's character is supposed to be an art curator at the Guggenheim, but for some reason her job is portrayed like a combination wedding planner and security guard. Look for something better than that for your Valentine's Day. A Prophet, directed by Jacques Audiard, is one of the nominees for Best Foreign Language Film at the Oscars. I saw this movie last fall at the Toronto European Film Festival. If you've never been there, that's a great annual festival sponsored by European embassies and consuls to show Torontonians, without charge, great movies from across the European Union. Actually, and this is a true story, I showed up early this year and wanted to make sure I was in the right line, so I asked the volunteer handing out tickets, "Is this for a profit?" "Mais non, monsieur, there is no charge for tickets." "No, is this movie a profit?" "No, no profit. If you wish to make a donation, please, but the festival is sponsored by the ambassador." "No, is the name of the movie a profit or not?" Etc. Who's on first? The movie itself is terrific. It's a prison movie, a gangster movie, and a coming-of-age movie, and just a great movie in general. It starts when Malik, a young street punk, is thrown into prison and is asked, first thing, if he needs any special diet or religious accommodations. Malik is French, but is of North African origin. He brushes it off and asks to be put in with the general prison population. So he finds himself in that rigidly segregated and hierarchical society, one of the few Muslims in the middle of a section controlled by the Corsican mafia. He gradually adjusts to his new life under Cesar, the top Corsican gangster, amidst harrowing violence and a callous disregard for human life, in which he is forced to be an active participant. As he learns the ins and outs, you see Malik gradually transform from a scruffy, frightened kid to a Scarface type, with a new wardrobe, mustache, and hairstyle to match his rising status. The title of the movie comes from his unusual nature. Malik continues to communicate with the dead in his dreams and to carry on conversations with prison ghosts. There are some shockingly violent scenes and a harrowingly realistic look at the French prison system, but this just adds to a really good, moving, and haunting film. Just to review, I talked about My Winnipeg, Guy Maddin's great homage to that city, showing at Cinematheque Ontario, When in Rome, a lame comedy, now playing, check listings, and the movie A Prophet, opening in Toronto later in February. This is Daniel Garber at the movies every Friday on Take 5, CIUT 89.5 FM, and on my website, culturalmining.com.